back, Long Island. You're listening to BDI on Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Lomas, continuing my conversation with David Geswick. David is the founder and president of Autism Workforce. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Good. Where we left off, David, we were just scratching the surface around how Autism Workforce uses evidence-based strategy to cultivate the skills and talents of persons with autism who are often underemployed or at least not growing the way they might be in some of the organizations that they work for. So let's spend a few minutes on that and talk to our listeners about how you guys cultivate those talents.
Well, that cultivation begins beyond me, but with my entire team. My team, I have special education professional, former ABA behavioral therapist who worked in clinics, another team member who's worked in homes as well as I have as a job coach and designing those micro enterprises at a nonprofit. So I think it starts with the team. And we are individuals who have actually worked with individuals with autism, in these settings. So knowing that and then leveraging our strengths of, for example, using social narratives, creating task analysis at the job, all of those types of evidence-based practices that we know that make these individuals successful in the classroom, at some level, we are implementing that from the minute they come in to apply for a job and obviously then when they move on the job. We instill these practices, video models. We had video models at Hartshafter Marks when preparing that individual to understand how to make the various types of boxes or a way to package things. We use that. And in addition to, like I said, I think one of the biggest things is just task analysis and breaking the process down.
You also mentioned social stories, and I agree with you. That can be very effective. Can you describe a little bit about what they look like in some of your settings?
You kind of broke up there. I'm sorry.
Let me repeat that. Can you just describe a little bit about some of the social stories that you use?
Sure. So one of the things that we use when we bring an individual in to a partnered company that we're working with now, when they come in for an interview, we've just broken that process down. And the first thing they come in do is just tour and see the company. Take the pressure off of going in the interview, because we know the challenge, there could be enough anxiety just driving there or using the bus system or the train to get there. So let's just get them there, make them feel comfortable, meet some people. So we create the social narrative to prepare them for that. Where to park, what train to take, if they're taking a train, if they're going to take a bus system, because we work with the company and understand exactly their landscape and geographic location and know what, systems are available or transportation systems. Then when the individual gets there, it empowers them to say, hey, do you want to work here? Look at what the job is going to be like, right? Here's the environment you're working in. Here's your potential manager. Then they come back with a couple days later, but they don't have to, right? They can choose, I don't want to work here. When they do come back, we typically take the interview out of the process, right? Why? Because I know there's organizations out there that are modifying and trying to still have them interview. But if there's no eye contact, Dr. Romas, and most people know, some of these teachers and therapists or parents have been trying for 20 years to get their kids to make eye contact with someone. So why are we going to still try now at 22 years old or 23 years old? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So let's get them and assess them on the actual job. So we do a skill assessment with every job and every company we work with to really assess and see, can they do the job? Because that's what they're being hired for. And to piggyback on what you asked earlier about how are we preparing that individual to maybe add more to understand, like what you said about understand the various types of packaging of food or frozen products. Once we know the job, we then look at the highest level of, we look at the task and find the most challenging task. And that's what we're skill assessing the individual on. Or for that example, if something was coming down the conveyor belt, if I were to go back in time and do that, I would send a piece of poultry, then maybe something else and another frozen food. And let's see, can he identify or she identify and put it in the right spot, right? Our systems have evolved from just understanding the job, which we actually do the job. I think there's well-intended organizations out there that are just still doing job carving, but is the job coach or the anyone really doing the job and understanding how it works? Sometimes, not all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point you're making. David, have you found that some of the people who you're supporting have moved or graduated beyond some of the entry-level positions in which they started?
Yes, or they've started with one or two tasks, and then by, again, just getting them comfortable, then we've added more tasks with the company. So in turn, does that give them maybe a higher rate of pay sometimes? Or we've just added more hours to their day or to their week, right? To get them just more money. So that's how we've seen it happen. I think one of the most interesting stories that you'll find, if you give me a second to share this, one guy that we had high end of the spectrum, he didn't get a job at this one company that we were working with. He came into another company for an entry level position and ended up being the worst performing due to the fine motor. Okay. Mm-hmm. He was high end of the spectrum. High end of the spectrum, meaning he was an engineer. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get a job. That company has engineers. We said, hey, see what you can do with him maybe here. He's hired as an engineer, been there 3 years, is their first calibration technician in the company's history. $100 million company. First calibration technician that they've ever had. But here's a guy with that type of degree coming in for entry level, trying to do an important task to the business, but his skill set didn't fit it, but he was just trying to go in for $14, $15 an hour. And now he's an engineer who's the first in their organization's history to have this certification. It's awesome.
It is awesome. And it's also, just as you suggested, it's fascinating, I think. It is, and it really speaks to the larger issue, of matching people in any organization with or without autism to their strengths and to the job needs, which is just as you described, a bit of a there's some work involved. Testing a skill set, testing an ability, and I'm also going to ask you. I assume you're also looking to find the interests of a person too before you make those kind of assignments.
Yeah, we have a recruitment and employment coordinator. We vet that and try to see. But again, we give them the job description that is what we call autism ready. And the parent, the job coach, the individual gets to see what's really going to be happening on the job. And the individual gets the choice. Yeah, well, he may want to be a comic book artist. Well, hey, we're not saying this is a comic book artist job. This is what it is. And you can come in and try it. And if you like it, and if you perform the best and the company wants it, you're going to get the job. But we're not, overselling anything in here and say you're going to be a comic book artist. This is what it is. It's paid. It's always paid. Never internships, per se, unpaid internships, which is happening way too much still in this community. They are always paid. We will not partner with a company that is going to just not pay them. That is ridiculous. And I also think that if parents are listening, we've talked with many affluent families out there that say it's okay, they don't need to get paid. And parents, you got to stop that. Because if we allow that, that is doing a disservice to the families who don't have the funds, or the kids who do need the money, or the families who do need the money. But we got to stop saying, oh, it's okay, they don't need to be paid. No, it's not okay, because everyone should be getting paid.
David, in just a little time that we have remaining, what would you like listeners to walk away with about autism workforce? I mean, what's the most important takeaway in your mind?
Look, I'm very passionate and outspoken, and me and my team are. And we know what we're doing is special and unique, and we have now research to support it. 3 supporting studies. We now are part of a 5-year federal grant to help prepare essentially vocational rehab organizations on our model. With all that being said, I know what we're doing is special, but it's going to take a continued collaborative effort to help this community get jobs. And I encourage people to see and go to our website and see what we're doing that's different. And we're not trying to hide it, or we want to share it. But I also understand in this world, in this autism community, it is also a challenge. That's a whole nother discussion, trying to partner and work with organizations. I'm saying in the autism space, not in the companies. But I think we just got to keep going and keep moving forward, and change will happen.
David Gessler, founder and director and president, Autism Workforce. Thank you, David. Great chat.
Thanks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.